Guess who's back?
Back
again.
Back.
Hannah's back.
Back.
As a friend.
Back.
Hannah's back. Hannah's back. Hannah's back. Hannah's back. Hannah's back. Okay, that's inappropriate.
I was ready for the breakdown.
No.
I was excited.
How's everyone doing?
Like
no,
me?
I'm not asking you who are listening. I'm asking you, Hannah, how everyone is doing.
I think they're doing well.
Wow, that is very presumptuous, and I hope you're ashamed of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's up.
Yeah, you need to go
I'm a little squirrely right now.
Uh-huh.
It's very late at night, nearly 8 o'clock.
Yeah, it's way past your bedtime.
Yes. Hey, speaking of past my bedtime, today's day 142, and we're going to read Ecclesiastes 4, 5, 6, and 1 Corinthians 12.
You sounded like a phone recording.
I know.
That was wonderful.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Anyway, we're in the works of Solomon.
Okay.
That's where we're at right now. So 1 Kings 4 says that Solomon wrote a bunch of Proverbs and was really, really wise and wrote a bunch of songs. So we read all the Proverbs,
mm-hmm.
and we read his best song ever.
Yeah.
Remember the other day when I came home and told you that your hair looks like goats running down a mountain?
Mm-hmm.
That your nose is like a tower?
Yeah.
Your head's like a mountain?
Mm-hmm.
That's where I got that.
Yep. I was really impressed, honestly.
Yeah. Wow, what's up, mountain head? That's what I said to you, remember?
Yep.
Like, wow, look at your hair. It looks like goats running down that big mountain head of yours.
And I about fainted.
Yeah.
Because I was just so great. Kind.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
Anyway, and now we're in Ecclesiastes, which I think you like.
I do.
Yeah. I also like Ecclesiastes.
I like all the weird books.
It is a weird one.
Ecclesiastes and Hebrews.
Those are weird books.
They're weird.
They're weird books. And you like Revelation.
Yeah, that's real weird.
Weird book. Then there was a dragon. Okay, we're going to read Ecclesiastes chapter 4.
Okay.
Okay. Again, I observed all the oppression that takes place under the sun. I saw the tears of the oppressed with no one to comfort them. The oppressors have great power and their victims are helpless. So I concluded that the dead are better off than the living. But most fortunate of all are those who are not yet born, for they have not seen all the evil that is done under the sun. Then I observed that most people are motivated to success because they envy their neighbors. But this too is meaningless, like chasing the wind. Fools fold their idol's hand, leading them to ruin. And yet, better to have one handful with quietness than two handfuls with hard work and chasing the wind.
The advantages of companionship. I observed yet another example of something meaningless under the sun. This is the case of a man who is all alone, without a child or a brother, yet who works hard to gain as much wealth as he can. But then he asks himself, who am I working for? Why am I giving up so much pleasure now? It is all so meaningless and depressing. Two people are better off than one, for they can help each other succeed. If one person falls, the other can reach out and help. But someone who falls alone is in real trouble. Likewise, two people lying close together can keep each other warm. But how can one be warm alone? A person standing alone can be attacked and defeated, but two can stand back to back and conquer. Three are even better, for a triple braided cord is not easily broken.
The futility of political power. It is better to be a poor but wise youth than an old and foolish king who refuses all advice. Such a youth could rise from poverty and succeed. He might even become king, though he has been in prison. But then everyone rushes to the side of yet another youth who replaces him. Endless crowds stand around him, and then another generation grows up and rejects him too. So it is all meaningless, like chasing the wind.
Ecclesiastes 5, approaching God with care. As you enter the house of God, keep your ears open and your mouth shut. It is evil to make mindless offerings to God. Don't make rash promises and don't be hasty in bringing matters before God. After all, God is in heaven and you are here on earth, so let your words be few. Too much activity gives you restless dreams. Too many words make you a fool. When you make a promise to God, don't delay in following through, for God takes no pleasure in fools. Keep all the promises you make to him. It is better to say nothing than to make a promise and not keep it. Don't let your mouth make you sin. And don't defend yourself by telling the temple messenger that the promise you made was a mistake. That would make God angry, and he might wipe out everything you have achieved. Talk is cheap, like daydreams and other useless activities. Fear God instead.
The futility of wealth. Don't be surprised if you see a poor person being oppressed by the powerful and if justice is being miscarried throughout the land. For every official is under orders from higher up, and matters of justice get lost in red tape and bureaucracy. Even the king milks the land for his own profit. Those who love money will never have enough. How meaningless to think that wealth brings true happiness. The more you have, the more people come to help you spend it. So what good is wealth? except perhaps to watch it slip through your fingers. People who work hard sleep well, whether they eat little or much, but the rich seldom get a good night's sleep. There is another serious problem I have seen under the sun. Hoarding riches harms the saver. Money is put into risky investments that turn sour, and everything is lost. In the end, there is nothing left to pass on to one's children. We all come to the end of our lives as naked and empty-handed as the day we were born. We can't take our riches with us. And this, too, is a very serious problem. People leave this world no better off than when they came. All their hard work is for nothing, like working for the wind. Throughout their lives, they live under a cloud, frustrated, discouraged, and angry. Even so, I've noticed one thing, at least, that is good. It's good for people to eat, drink, and enjoy their work under the sun during the short life God has given them, and to accept their lot in life. And it is a good thing to receive wealth from God and from the good and the good health to enjoy it. To enjoy your work and accept your lot in life, this is indeed a gift from God. God keeps such people so busy enjoying life that they take no time to brood over their past.
Ecclesiastes 6. There is another serious tragedy I have seen under the sun, and it weighs heavily on humanity. God gives some people great wealth and honor and everything they could ever want, but then he doesn't give them the chance to enjoy these things. They die, and someone else, even a stranger, ends up enjoying their wealth. This is meaningless, a sickening tragedy. A man might have 100 children and live to be very old, but if he finds no satisfaction in life and doesn't even get a decent burial, it would have been better for him to be born dead. His birth would have been meaningless, and he would have ended in darkness. He wouldn't even have had a name, and he would never have seen the sun or known of its existence. Yet he would have had more peace than in growing up to be an unhappy man. He might live 1,000 years twice over, but still not find contentment. And since he must die like everyone else, well, what's the use? All people spend their lives scratching for food, but they never seem to have enough. So are wise people really better off than fools? Do poor people gain anything by being wise and knowing how to act in front of others? Enjoy what you have rather than desiring what you don't have. Just dreaming about nice things is meaningless, like chasing the wind.
The future, determined and unknown. Everything has already been decided. It was known long ago what each person would be. So there's no use arguing with God about your destiny. The more words you speak, the less they mean. So what good are they? In the few days of our meaningless lives, who knows how our days can best be spent? Our lives are like a shadow. Who can tell what will happen on this earth after we are gone? Okay, and we jump forward.
Mm-hmm.
To 1 Corinthians
12.
Chapter. Hang on, Hannah. 12.
Okay.
Go ahead.
1 Corinthians 12. Spiritual gifts. Now, dear brothers and sisters, regarding your question about the special abilities the Spirit gives us, I don't want you to misunderstand this. You know that when you were still pagans, you were led astray and swept along in worshiping speechless idols. So I want you to know that no one speaking by the Spirit of God will curse Jesus, and no one can say Jesus is Lord except by the Holy Spirit. There are different kinds of spiritual gifts, but the same Spirit is the source of them all. There are different kinds of service, but we serve the same Lord. God works in different ways, but it is the same God who does the work in all of us. A spiritual gift is given to each of us so we can help each other. To one person, the Spirit gives the ability to give wise advice. To another, the same Spirit gives a message of special knowledge. The same Spirit gives great faith to another, and to someone else, the one Spirit gives the gift of healing. He gives one person the power to perform miracles and another the ability to prophesy. He gives someone else the ability to discern whether a message is from the Spirit of God or from another spirit. Still another person is given the ability to speak in unknown languages, while another is given the ability to interpret what is being said. It is the one and only Spirit who distributes all these gifts. He alone decides which gift each person should have.
The church as one body with many parts. The human body has many parts, but many parts make up one whole body. So it is with the body of Christ. Some of us are Jews, some are Gentiles, some are slaves, and some are free. But we've all been baptized into one body by one Spirit, and we all share the same Spirit. Yes, the body has many different parts, not just one part. If the foot says, "I'm not a part of the body because I'm not a hand," that does not make it any less part of the body. And if the ear says, "I'm not part of the body because I'm not an eye," would that make it any less a part of the body? If the whole body were an eye, how would you hear? Or if your whole body were an ear, how would you smell anything? But our bodies have many parts, and God has put each part just where he wants it. How strange a body would be if it had only one part. Yes, there are many parts, but only one body. The eye can never say to the hand, "I don't need you." The head can't say to the feet, "I don't need you." In fact, some parts of the body that seem weakest and least important are actually the most necessary. And the parts we regard as less honorable are those we clothe with the greatest care. So we carefully protect those parts that should not be seen, while the more honorable parts do not require the special care. So God has put the body together such that extra honor and care are given to those parts that have less dignity. This makes for harmony among the members, so that all the members care for each other. If one part suffers, all the parts suffer with it, and if one part is honored, all the parts are glad. All of you together are Christ's body, and each of you is a part of it. Here are some of the parts God has appointed for the church. First are apostles. Second are prophets. Third are teachers. Then those who do miracles, those who have the gift of healing, those who can help others, those who have the gift of leadership, those who speak in unknown languages. Are we all apostles? Are we all prophets? Are we all teachers? Do we all have the power to do miracles? Do we all have the gift of healing? Do we all have the ability to speak in unknown languages? Do we all have the ability to interpret unknown languages? Of course not. So you should earnestly desire the most helpful gifts. But now, let me show you a way of life that is best of all.
Ooh, cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm. But Paul did it.
I like it.
And that is our reading today. Reading today. Yeah, mm-hmm. I got it. Yep. And we read that with two questions in mind.
We did.
Yeah. How does this help us love God more?
Mm-hmm.
How does this help us love others more? So, Hannah,
uh-huh.
The question is to you.
Mm-hmm.
How does this help you love
others?
Let me finish. How does this help you love others more?
It was God until we got to the spiritual gifts.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to take that softball today.
It's not a softball.
So, I mean, the way that this helps me love others more is find out what your spiritual gift is and serve in the church. Because you...
That was going to be the end.
Yeah, that's it. No. I don't know. It just seems... It's so frustrating to me because... it used to be unhealthy. And I think now it's a relatively healthy way that, like, it is amazing that God gives us, like, a superpower.
Yeah.
That when we become Christians, he gives us a superpower.
Yep.
And it's not one that we are supposed to use to further ourselves and to become more successful to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that we are supposed to use to build the church.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this is the healthy frustration is, like, people, and I did. People stifle that.
Mm-hmm.
They're stifling the spirit and they're not serving in their church because they're just maybe not sure what their spiritual gift is, or maybe not sure where that spiritual gift, maybe they do know, but they don't know where it fits into a ministry in their church. And it's just so clear in this passage that if, you know, one of the best ways that we can love other people is by using our spiritual gifts in the church.
Mm-hmm. Without a doubt. Yeah. And the thing is, like, God's called you to a specific church that needs your specific gift.
Mm-hmm. It says he put you in the place. So, yeah, I like that addition. But, yeah, it's just, you know, you see the 80-20 or the 20-80, I guess you should say, where, and it's not like, it used to be about the work because I was overwhelmed with the amount of work that I was doing. So I'm like, you know, we see this amount of staff and this amount of volunteers, and there's still 180 members of the congregation essentially not serving each other. So it used to be a super unhealthy place for me. But now it's more like, this is so exciting. Imagine where the church would be and where your relationship with other Christians would be if you were doing your part.
Everyone.
That's what I mean by you.
Yeah.
Like, if everyone was doing your part. Because if you think about the analogy that the Bible gives, not that I'm giving, the Bible gives, you have a bunch of bodies walking around with missing parts.
Mm-hmm.
How inefficient and ugly. That's really frightening. Like, that made me chuckle when I thought about that. Like, there's people with missing eyes walking out there. There's bodies with missing eyeballs and missing hands.
Do you think the angels got offended when Paul wrote that about, like, what if you were all eyes?
I think the angels are like that.
Whoa.
Hey, now.
Hey, they're like, hey, whoa, man, whoa.
Hold me back.
What's wrong with you?
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's my rant. And if you had asked me like a year ago, it would have been from a very unhealthy place. But now it's just like, get excited. Like, there are spiritual gifts tests. There's one at First Baptist Church, livingalegacy.church/serving. And then there's one for Harvest Church, jointheharvest.church/ministry. And if you don't go to either of those churches, go to the URL.
You're not allowed on the websites.
You know, don't you dare.
You're not allowed on our websites. If you don't go to our church.
Honestly.
Yeah, I don't, yeah.
But no, if you don't go to those churches, go on the websites and take a spiritual gifts test and see. It's exciting.
Yeah.
Like, how can I use it? It's a superpower. It's something that you would not have if God didn't give it to you. Like, it's just, it's so incredible and it's such an opportunity. And yes, it's cool to find out for yourself, but like, it is the way, like, it's one of the best ways that you can love other people, because like, yes, in that context you're loving other Christians because it's the church, right? Mm-hmm. But when the church is at full functioning power, that's when the gospel can spread and you can reach the unsaved much more efficiently. So that is loving them too. It's just in a very roundabout way, but it's still, yeah, anyway. My rant is over.
I just wish we could get an ounce of passion out of you about this.
Yeah.
I wish that, like, something in the text would have stirred you today.
I know, I was
today,
really dry. Even a little bit. I wonder if I, like, maxed out, you know, like, the fizz that you get when you cap out the...
Yeah. Maybe. You know, this the whole idea of the body and the functioning. I always go back to the tendon I tore in my ankle when I was in the Army, my posterior tibialis tendon. And... when I tore that tendon, the rest of my body stopped being able to do the things that it could do before. Mm-hmm. Like, I used to run. I used to run for exercise. I can't do that now. Mm-hmm. But what's funny, Hannah, is if you take that posterior tibialis, a perfectly healthy one, and you put it on a table, it's also not running.
Yep.
The body needs the parts, but the parts need the body.
Yep.
You know, and I just think, man, do we miss that?
Yeah.
I think we miss out on that. Okay, so how does this help me love God more? The hopelessness of Ecclesiastes, like, it's obviously, so Solomon, he has some big moments in his life where he is very far off about God. You know, he marries all those foreign women and worships other gods. And I think he's really far off about God in the way that he writes in Ecclesiastes. But he's writing from a very raw and honest place. Mm-hmm. I did notice in the text today... so last year, I noticed that there's an allusion to his brother who died as a baby. Remember, David and Bathsheba had a baby who died. If he finds no satisfaction in life and doesn't even get a decent burial, it would have been better for him to have been born dead. His birth would have been meaningless and he would have ended in darkness. He wouldn't even had a name and he never would have seen the sun or known its existence. I mean, that was his brother. Mm-hmm. Right? I noticed that last year. This year, I noticed... him talking about his sons.
Man.
but I don't think he knows he's talking about his sons. Like, what happens with Rehoboam next in the story that we're, as we move on in the biblical narrative here in a couple weeks, it's better to be poor but wise youth than an old and foolish king who refuses all advice. Mm. That's what Rehoboam did, and there was a whole civil war based on it.
Yeah.
So I just think that it's very interesting. But when we look at Ecclesiastes in the hopelessness of it, it brings about a worldview called nihilism. And I talked about this yesterday or the day before. Yesterday, yeah, because we started the book. And this is belief that, like, nothing matters. Mm-hmm. Nothing matters. Now, nihilism is the ultimate conclusion that you come to when you say there is no God.
Yeah.
When there's no God, nothing matters because there's no afterlife. There's nothing after this. Who cares? Like, who cares if my kids are good? Who cares what? Like, who cares? I'm going to be dead and then I'll be gone forever and who cares? Right? And it's very, very hopeless and scary. But if there is a God, then nihilism doesn't work. And so I think that that is the answer in Ecclesiastes. Now, nihilism is like jumping off the cliff of naturalism, which is there is no God. So you jump off this cliff and you hit the ground. That's nihilism. But then sometimes the carcass of who you are just bounces once. And as you bounce, that's existentialism. So you acknowledge there is no God. Boom, you hit the bottom. Nothing matters. And then you say, so that means I can decide my own purpose. And that's when you bounce a little bit. That, for a while, there were Christians who bought in on existentialism, very famously Soren Kierkegaard and others. And I just think Ecclesiastes shows us that nihilism doesn't work. Existentialism doesn't work. Look, he's trying to generate a purpose all throughout this book. Mm-hmm. Wealth, wisdom, power, like all of it, hard work, like... I mean, he tries to, throughout this book, find a purpose.
And it gets shut down.
And it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Existentialism doesn't work. Nihilism doesn't work. Here's the deal. This is how you can love God more. And it's in the book of Ecclesiastes. It's unsaid until the end of the book of Ecclesiastes and a little bit here in chapter 5. Put God first. Mm-hmm. Instead of cutting him out of your philosophy or your outlook on life, put him first. Mm-hmm. Say, God, you're first in everything I do, in everything I am, and everything that's meaningful that comes out of my life will begin with you. And then we'll see the rest.
And like in the first verse of chapter 5, verses, that starts with shutting up.
Yeah.
Putting your ears open and shut your mouth.
Mouth shut. Yep.
And that means putting your, you know, that's, it's also like, you know, when you open your mouth, it's because you have preconceived notions or biases or preferences. And it just means like shutting self down.
Yeah.
Self is the root of all sin. It's the root of evil. And shut it down.
Yep.
There's no place for self.
Mm-hmm.
In this.
Until if you start with God.
It's so right.
If once you start with God, do you know where that will lead you with yourself? To serving and loving others. Mm-hmm. And then there's a self because you are uniquely gifted. But if you approach that without God, the best you'll do is existentialism and it doesn't work.
Yep.
So it all kind of goes together.
Nice little bridge there, honey.
Yeah, it goes together. Thank you. She's not referring to anything I said. I've been playing Lego this whole time. And yeah. I build a small bridge, and it's very,
very nice.
It's very good. It's colorful.
It's just nice.
Okay, it's really nice. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Hey, it was fun to read with you.
You too.
I didn't appreciate your attitude, but it was fine.
I'll bring more energy next time.
There's like a dripping faucet. Just that drip.
I was hearing it too.
No.
It was louder today.
You know what? It feels almost like, I don't know, like living in an attic. The small corner of an attic,
yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
That's what it feels like.
I can't relate, but yeah.
Thank you for reading for real.
Yeah.
Hey guys, the big storm in Newton kind of threw stuff off this week. I'm sorry about the episode being late yesterday and sorry about, I guess I'm not sorry that Hannah read today. I'm thankful that Hannah read today, but the regular schedule is upset right now. So we'll get back to it, but it's good to switch things up, even though Chip doesn't think so. And yeah, it's cool. All right, thanks guys, proud of you, keep reading. We'll be back tomorrow, maybe with some energy this time.
So sorry.